Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We received many nice cards, letters, even telegrams, emails from our recipients of our year-end awards. Not so much from the negative ones, but, you know, a lot of people very appreciative, of course. But now we get back to the day-to-day good, bad, and crazy martinis. We hope you all had a wonderful holiday season, had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And, Jim, we dive right back in with the good martini, and unfortunately it seems to be under very not good circumstances, and that's that Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick Cheney, who had been fighting a very uphill battle for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate in Wyoming against incumbent Mike Enzi, is dropping out of the race. The bad news is, as you have reported, that it looks like one of her kids is dealing with a pretty serious medical condition, and obviously we hope that that is resolved quickly and then that the whole family is doing well. But this had been shaping up as a pretty fierce and difficult brawl. There had been some bad blood already between the two campaigns. The two Cheney sisters ended up getting into a public spat over the different positions on marriage. And overall, it looked like it was going to be an expensive race in a state where the GOP didn't need that. They're going to have enough tough races around the country anyway. And it probably saves Liz Cheney, if she desires to run again sometime, whether in Wyoming or back in Virginia, where she spent a lot of time. But overall, for the party, possibly a good way to allocate resources in a more needful way this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where this is, at best, a bittersweet good martini. This race was not turning out the way Liz Cheney expected. I think, you know, most, a good portion of Wyoming Republicans didn't see anything particularly wrong with Mike Enzi, didn't see him as being a Charlie Crist or an Ireland Spector or a squish of any kind. He wanted another term. He'd been there a long time, but I guess they were pretty darn comfortable with him being in there. There were some accusations she was a carpetbagger, as you mentioned. She had, you know, lived in Virginia for a good chunk of her life, but always saw her roots as being in Wyoming. There is a Senate race in Virginia this year with Mark Warner, and the latest word is that Ed Gillespie is making noises about running there. But Cheney chose to run in Wyoming and did not get the reception she was hoping for. You saw it mentioned that high-profile spat she had with her sister. When the announcement came, actually broke late last night that she was dropping out of the race, there were a couple of folks who wondered if this had to do with her poll position and the fact that victory was looking outside of her grasp, at least so far in this race. I've heard through the grapevine that this is a, you know, fairly serious issue with someone in her family. It's not involving former Vice President Cheney. You know, you just hope that things turn out for her and her family in this. Obviously, she's got bigger issues and bigger concerns on her plate right now. This does preserve her viability for some future bid. Every dollar that was going Cheney and going to Mike Enzi to fight this out was money that was not going to challengers of, say, Kay Hagan or other vulnerable Democratic senators who really need to get tossed out this year if we're going to, you know, fight the administration on Obamacare and other fronts. So for Republicans, this is the joy of a you know, long, messy fight avoided, and one that was not looking particularly promising for someone who I think a lot of conservatives saw as a promising rising star. So perhaps some future day she will return to the campaign trail, but for now, one last Senate race that looks all that interesting, competitive. Many reporters, by the way, very disappointed they won't take a trip to Jackson Hole or something to report on this race. Kind of a was that more another bittersweet twinge to that, Greg?
Well, one of the things Liz Cheney, of course, was best known for was her strong views on foreign policy and a definite role for America in the world. And, of course, when her father was vice president, no issue on that front was bigger than the Iraq war. And in the past few days, we've seen very discouraging news there, and that's that al-Qaeda rebels in Iraq have taken control of Fallujah. And now the reports today that there's major fighting going on in the nearby city of Ramadi, and of course, none of that is all that far from Baghdad. And of course, since U.S. forces left at the end of 2011, there hasn't been a ton of coverage there. One thing that's a little bit confusing is that those are the bad guys in Iraq, but supposedly the good guys in Syria in a lot of different ways. And a lot of folks now looking back at the fact that there was no status of forces agreement at the end of 2011. Jim, I don't know if that makes the difference here. It's clear that Iraq is in shambles, and that's very discouraging given the blood and treasure that we sent there. And obviously, it's not turning out the way that the previous administration, and I have to assume this administration, would have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, the flag of al-Qaeda flying over Fallujah, if that's not a wake-up call for your foreign policy team, I don't know what is. Ever since the bin Laden raid, there's been this perception of, okay, the U.S. has won the war on terror. and it's time to wrap it up and you know, just do the rest through drones and you know, enter a post-war period. Well, Al-Qaeda didn't get that memo, and they're continuing to be a bigger force on the battlefield in Syria. Obviously, they are, you know, as you saw, becoming a force on the ground in Iraq, now calling themselves ISIS. I believe it's, you know, the translation is basically trying to create an Islamic state of Iraq and Syria. Basically, you can draw a line from about Algeria all the way across the globe to about Kashmir between Pakistan and India. And basically, there's trouble in every one of those countries for U.S. interests, and I'd argue for innocent life, you know, going through Libya and the troubles with militants there, the upheaval in Egypt, Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Iran and its nuclear program. Oh, wait, we're talking with them. That's going to take care of itself. It was a fairly solid front page story in the New York Times this past weekend that basically looked over this whole region and basically said this is what the people who didn't like the Bush years and the Iraq war and this era of what they saw as U.S. militarism and interventionism. Well, now you've got your alternative. This is what happens in the vacuum. It gets really bloody really fast. And the Syrian civil war isn't staying within the borders of Syria anymore. You had that awful car bombing in Lebanon about a week ago. Now you've got this additional violence in Iraq. They said it was the most violent year in Iraq since U.S. troops have left. What are my predictions for the coming year? Look, in Syria, one of the things that made the factors that made it such a bloody war was it turned into a proxy fight between the Iranians, between the Saudi Arabians and Jordanians, Turks. Every faction basically had, including for a while, looked like the United States was going to jump in. You find the folks who you think are most aligned with your worldview, and you give them guns, and you give them money, and you give them supplies, and let them fight it out. Well, right now, it's no longer a fight of everybody against everybody in Syria. It's now looking more and more like everybody against everybody across the entire Middle East. And if that doesn't send a chill down your spine, I don't know what does, because this is already, the past year we've seen chemical weapons used. We've seen mass, car bombs and every kind of form of terrorism under the sun. And there's no sign it's going to get any better. And this administration just wants it to go away. You mentioned the Iraq aspect. There's this fascinating quote in the New York Times story, which said that the attitude of the Obama administration towards most of the decisions by Maliki over in Iraq has been, well, we don't want to rock the boat. Well, the boat is now rocked. Okay, Al-Qaeda has control of Fallujah. That's the at this point, a non-rocking boat is not an option. The question is, what do you want to do about it? And according to John Kerry this weekend, the answer is, well, we're willing to help, but not with troops. So we'll just hope that a lot of money can, hopefully Maliki can buy his way to a stable, unified country, which is not looking particularly good, nor is the outlook looking good in Afghanistan or really any one of those countries I mentioned earlier.
First of all, your geography teachers will be very proud that you could link all the way from Algeria to Pakistan.
I'm not even looking at a map right now.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And also, where was that reset button? Did they put it in a closet somewhere? Because we might need to hit that again.
It's Putin's world. We just live in it.
All right, on to martini number three now, the crazy martini, and congratulations to President Obama for being the first in our daily martinis in the crazy martini there this year. While he was still in Hawaii, he's back here now with his daughters. Michelle is still in Hawaii for a few days as a birthday present, but the president in his weekly address had this to say about his push to extend unemployment benefits with a shot at the Republicans.
Just a few days after Christmas, more than 1 million of our fellow Americans lost a vital economic lifeline. The temporary insurance that helps folks make ends meet while they look for a job. Republicans in Congress went home for the holidays and let that lifeline expire. And for many of their constituents who are unemployed through no fault of their own, that decision will leave them with no income at all.
Jim, a lot of thoughts come to mind here, but even though I'm sure the president would have liked to see that in the budget deal, it wasn't there. So why did he leave town?
This is one of his two messages he taped from his beachfront condo in Hawaii. About how terrible it is that Congress had left Washington without finishing its work. The previous week, Greg, he and Michelle had taped about the importance of giving back and volunteerism. And at this time of year, it's really important to think of the less fortunate. He taped it from within the beachfront condo. And then, according to the president's daily schedule, went and played golf. I guess he'll be helping out caddies this year, Greg. That's his little extra tip for those guys carrying the golf clubs. On the issue of extending the unemployment benefits, your heart breaks for everybody who's still going through long-term unemployment and the benefits potentially running out. It is worth noting, though, that for a while we had up to 99 weeks, which comes out. Those of you who can do math are coming out that, hey, that's nearly 2 years. I believe after it was lowered down a little bit, it was still in the neighborhood of like 70-some weeks, so about a year and 4 months. And now all it's doing is reverting back to the quote-unquote normal level of unemployment benefits, which is 26 weeks. So that's not nothing, right? I mean, that's a pretty long stretch in which people will provide unemployment benefits. Unemployment benefits aren't particularly generous, and I realize it's tough to make ends meet there. But, you know, economists have studied this and basically found that when you have generous unemployment benefits, some people will turn down work. Not everybody, but, you know, some people will turn down job opportunities because they can make more with their unemployment benefits. I can understand that, at least for a while. But you know, it is, you know, at one point, is it reasonable for the taxpayer to say, hey, you really have to find a job now? That we are a generous society. We are a caring and compassionate society. We understand times are tough and jobs are not as plentiful under these economic policies we have here. But you're not supposed to be on unemployment forever. And I think that, you know, the previous, you know, listing of 6 months, we decided it was perhaps, you know, insufficient for the time period back in 2008, 2009. Here we are now. It is now 2014. And unemployment rate is down to 7%, which is, you know, better than it has been for much of the past couple of years. The idea that this is some sort of, you know, draconian, miserly, you know, Scrooge-ish policy approach doesn't quite hold up, unless your mentality is that if you lose a job, you should be able to collect unemployment until you find a job that you like as much as the old one, and that there shouldn't be any limits. I mean, you know, at that point, you know, people might say, well, why is it only a year and 4 months? Why couldn't it be 2 years? Why not 3 years? Going back to the welfare debate of the 1990s, we said, hey, wait a minute. We don't want people to be on public assistance for their entire lives. We want people to go out and try to find work and to find work and to be self-sufficient. So typical demagoguery from the president. I'm sure he rushed through it so he could get back to the golf course there. But hey, what you know, this is what we have to look forward to for the next 3 years, Greg.
Get ready for this to be part of the overall economic inequality debate that the Democrats plan to run on this year, because they're certainly going to not be running just on trying to defend Obamacare. That's going to be their offensive issue for the year, it would seem, and this will be the first salvo.
Does anything surprise us from this administration anymore, Greg?
No.
We'll have to try harder. It's a good thing we don't have the surprising. We have a crazy martini, but not necessarily a surprising martini.
No, not at all. Jim, good to be back in the saddle. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.